Welcome back to Radio New Bloom. I'm Shang, the host of today's episode, where we spoke to Jati Kong, the editor-in-chief of Sine Theta magazine. Being a member of the Sino-Diaspora myself, I've been following Sine Theta since approximately its inception, and I asked Jati to come on so that we could unpack the significance of what it means to identify as Sino. Today's conversation focuses on the emergence of Sino as an identity label, and subsequently, how difficult it is to define that. I really appreciated Jachi's insights on the political ramifications of such an identity, as well as how art created by the Sino-Diaspora community engages with these tensions and contradictions. Anyway, I had a lot of fun recording today's episode, and I hope you enjoy. Welcome to the show, and thank you for coming on. Could you please introduce yourself for the listeners?
Hi, and thank you so much for having me. So my name is Jachi. And I am the founding editor-in-chief of Sine Theta magazine, which is an international creative arts publication made by and for the Sino diaspora. I am currently an art history student in the UK, so I did my undergrad at Oxford, and I'm there for my master's, and I'm probably going to stay for my PhD. I also just like do some writing and editing as well.
As you said, you're the editor-in-chief at Sine Theta magazine, which you also founded. It's described as an identity-based magazine focusing specifically on the Sino diaspora. So I wanted to ask, what does being a member of the Sino diaspora mean to you? And how do you see this identity as derived from or opposed to or also like different in some ways from other identities that like such as like Asian diaspora, Chinese, Han, etc. that are typically associated with or used to describe this community?
Thank you so much for that question. So I guess I should start with, why we founded Sine Theta in the first place. This was in 2016, and it was just, me and my friends on Tumblr were like, oh, it would be really cute if we started this, magazine. And at the time, I was definitely going through what I now would retroactively very much call diaspora angst. I was kind of like, oh my god, I'm Chinese, isn't that so crazy? I have to do something about this. And I spent ages just watching Zhang Yimou films and being really like Wong Kar Wai and stuff. And I, at this around the same time, I also did these camps called the Root Seeking Camp. And it's this thing that's very specific to mainland China. It's kind of Birthright in Israel, where if you're Chinese, you can just do summer camps in China for free. And it's for diasporic people to rediscover their roots. You just have to get there. You have to pay for your own flight, but once you get there, it's free. And I did that in 2014 and 2015. And I met a lot of kids who were just also Sino and from different parts of the world. I just thought that was really cool, and I just kind of started getting thinking about how huge the Sino diaspora is, and how there's where there are people, there are Sino people basically, and how it's not really something at the time it wasn't really something that I really felt in touch with in Switzerland, where there's not really a huge immigrant community. Also thanks to the power of the internet, most of my Sino friends, people that I could talk about identity and diaspora with, were online. So we just decided to just throw that all together and kind of found a community. And it's definitely evolved since then, because at first I was very much a teenager, and I was very sort of into just classic online identity politics. I was just oh, we need to have representation, so let's do this thing and just have fun. And it's going to be super apolitical. We're just all going to just write poetry or whatever, because each of the themes, each of the issues have themes. But then increasingly, I've been thinking a lot about just the inherent radicality of diasporic positions, and how sort of being in this very transnational, having this really unique experience, it really helps you kind of understand I guess in a way it's kind of a jumping point for you to start thinking about more liberated forms of politics and of community. Increasingly I think that diaspora is a really important framework from which we can think about more interesting and non-national futures, I suppose. And then to answer your second question, I think the word Sino is definitely something that I'm quite glad we ended up going with from the very beginning. So firstly, with Asian, obviously there's this there's, like, a lot of tension within, like, the idea of, like, a pan-Asian identity, which, like, I know that the history comes from, you know, the 1960s and, like, California and, like, the Vietnam War. And that's, like not really something that at first I was... I mean, I'm not American, so it's not something that I was, like, sort of the... It wasn't really my legacy, and the pan-Asian, like, solidarity that I was seeing online was kind of basically just, like, subtle Asian traits, and I didn't really see that much potential in sort of trying to create this pan-Asian solidarity when it just seemed... It didn't really seem like it was that productive, so I thought it would be more interesting to have a smaller scope and think about, because, like, even within Sino... the Sino-diaspora, right, there's, like, already so many differences between, like, nation and ethnicity and language and all that. Yeah, so I just thought it would be maybe more productive and interesting. Sino is because, like, obviously, you know, for example, some people from Taiwan wouldn't want to identify as Chinese because it comes with, like, a nation-state sort of label. So we thought Sino would be a more neutral term. And then in terms of Han, like, yeah, Sino is, like, really defined in, like, the broadest sense possible, and ultimately it's self-identification. I don't really think that Han has, like, that much to do with it, but obviously that's, like, a really sort of... There's, like, a lot to say about that.
Thank you so much for that, like, complex and, like, well-thought-out answer. I think that leads into the next question I have, actually, which is about defining Sino, like, culturally and politically, or also in other ways. I found it interesting that, like, on the Sign Theta magazine website, it says it's in part of the mission statement is that you guys want to challenge the conceptions of borders regarding the Sino diaspora, which I find really innovative and interesting. But I wanted to ask, like, how you view this mission when it comes to places like Taiwan or Hong Kong, which are pretty strongly linked to the Sino diaspora, the Sino community, but they also have, like, strong, I guess I would say, like, individual, like, cultural and political identities that change depending on who you ask, but are also linked to, like, borders and, like, this strong, like, idea of, like, nation state.
Yeah, sure. This is, like, a really interesting question. Something that I'm still learning a lot about, and I think, like dialogue is something that's really important to thinking about this. So firstly, we definitely started out just defining Sino culturally because it was sort of the most obvious kind of thing. But then obviously, like, that starts running into, like when you can't actually define Sino-ness, but then there are also things that you can point at and be like, that's Sino. And it's kind of this paradox. And, like, increasingly, I would see it more as a political definition, but whereas political would, the emphasis would be more on the term diaspora rather than Sino, because, like, I don't want to be, like, a broken record because I always quote Alan Chun, fuck Chineseness, but, like, I think it's really interesting when he says, like, it's not really about defining Chineseness or, like, what is and isn't Chinese, but it's more about moments of crises of Chineseness or moments in which the definition it's more about what types of Chineseness are relevant in what contexts, as well as moments in which ideas of Chineseness might be put into crisis or put into question. So obviously it's kind of just like this kind of thing that, like, you can't really define or talk about, but that does have an impact. So it's a really interesting way of thinking about it. So basically, it doesn't really have a definition. I think, like, once you know, you're hard-pressed to, like, start talking about it in tangible terms, but it has, like, so much political power, specifically in the diaspora. Like, so, like, just sort of, I guess, to start off, like, in terms of what we would define as, like, the Sino-diaspora, which would be if you, like, have heritage from, like, a source land, and then you spent time outside of the quote-unquote source land. Technically, like, I wouldn't, for example, define, like, someone who was born and raised in Taiwan as, like, being part of the diaspora necessarily, but then, like, there's also, they could also contend with that. I guess, like, for me, like, the borders and the ideas of nationhood that pertain to the quote-unquote source land, such as Taiwan and Hong Kong and Macau, are, like, less interesting to me compared to when people leave the source land and come into terms with like cross-cultural encounters, I suppose. And then like ultimately I just think like it's very self-determined. Like if people want to identify as like some way or another, it's really up to them. And then ultimately what matters is like when people kind of come together and commiserate and think of like things that we could be doing together toward a common goal, which is obviously like the destruction of capitalism and all of that.
So my next question is kind of about capitalism, actually. Yeah, so I wanted to ask about how the emergence of this identity and Sign Theta as a publication kind of like arises as a response, I guess, or an effect of globalization and capitalism, and how those two systems kind of connect us but also like separate us in different ways. In the context of an increasingly globalized world, where do you see the need for this international community, like the Sino-Diaspora community, arise the most, like in what aspects, and what are the challenges of building that global community?
Thank you so much again for this question. Like, it's so fascinating to me, and I'm probably gonna start rambling again, but I really do find this like really interesting. And I do think like the term Sino, which I'm like seeing increasingly now, is like really fun, and I think it like provokes like a lot of really interesting questions such as this one. And I've actually been thinking a lot recently about how the history of the Chinese diaspora or the Sino diaspora is like the history of capitalism. You just can't divorce one from the other. I'm doing this project in my master's, like I'm taking a class called Histories of Photography, and I have to like write my own, I have to do like a book proposal for history of photography. And mine is about like the Chinese body at labor in like 8 photographs, and I'm like thinking about like modernity, like indenture and like unfree labor, and also migration and like the hostile environment and all that. It's like I'm like getting really lost in the sauce, but I think that obviously, you know, an increasingly globalized world, like the world became global like when capitalism sort of was invented in like the modern age. So like obviously, you know, as you said yourself, like there's this paradox of how like all the connections that we have now come inherently from this like system of exploitation, but then at the same time, like there is finally the opportunity for us to like find our own liberation, which in a way kind of is kind of like, it kind of undermines that famous Audre Lorde quote, like the master's tools won't to destroy the master's house or something, because like the master in this case has like provided us with the potential to maybe destroy the master's house. I think that that's like super exciting, and then obviously there are like so many challenges that come with that, because I think like something that I've really been learning in the past year, in like the summer of 2020, I like along with a lot of other people started learning about abolition, and I just think like one of the biggest challenges honestly is like the imagination. There are so many, like a huge refrain that I heard like last summer was people would just be like, I didn't know you were allowed to like abolish the police. And I was like, yeah, like I just honestly didn't know that that you could do that. So like definitely like just like trying to imagine a world that is borderless and a world that is like just and equitable is already like such a huge step, and then like putting that into action obviously is also really difficult, but like once you think that that's like even possible, it really gets the ball rolling. And I think like building a global community has been really important to me. Like I get kind of annoyed when people are like, oh my god, Sign Theta magazine is like my favorite Asian American publication. Like we are not Asian and we're also not American. And like I really want to kind of move away from this idea that like you have to identify with a nation or more than one nation or any kind of sort of group in general in order to feel like you belong. I feel like the power of community is like forcing relationality, like forcing people to come together, even though it's difficult, even though it can be kind of fraught sometimes, and even though people sometimes might have like contradictory ideas or motivations. I think like what's powerful is like finding a way to forge alliances despite that. And then like obviously there's also just like being virtual, being online, there are like also a lot of obstacles because you can't, I mean obviously with COVID like you can't meet up in general. In terms of like the magazine itself, like we would probably be like a lot more established or like a lot more famous if we were based in like New York or London or whatever, where people would like really get to know us. But still, like I think it's quite nice that we have like this like quite tight-knit group of people who are like always interested in talking about things that we might all be interested in. Like, yeah, I think that like working together and like the idea of solidarity, it's honestly, it's only significant if we're doing something that is at the end of the day both tangible and realistic, but also utopian. Like, I don't want to like do all the work of fighting for something that is a compromise. So yeah, down with capitalism.
Cool. I think I'm trying to think if I had any other questions related to that. I think it's also interesting that you bring up like imagination and like I think when it comes to identity, there's always like an aspect of looking backwards, like at history, like, and there's also like what you said, like the imagination, like looking forward, like, yeah, like I guess like what is the challenge of like bringing those two things together, and also in addressing those things, like looking at like past ways of thinking about identity, and then like the challenge of looking forward and like utilizing imagination to like think of what this identity like will become, or like what you want to imagine it into.
Cool. Yeah, that's really interesting. I guess like I guess I should start with what like first popped into mind, which is definitely like a still very half-formed thought. So like and honestly, this is just okay. So basically, I follow like that guy like Ice Must Be Destroyed on Twitter, and he like posts a lot. But like there's this one thread that was where he was talking about how he read like The Poppy War by R.F. Kuang, and he was really struck by how R.F. Kuang's relationship to her family and her history is a story of like no history, as in like her family never told her anything about like her heritage or like why they moved to America and all that, and like how in part for her, like the way that she writes and like the Poppy War is like for her to like excavate history on her own, and like, you know, like the voiceless, the subaltern, whatever. And then like Ice, I don't know his name, so like Ice Must Be Destroyed was like, oh, like for me it's the opposite, because my like relationship to Sinonis is like too much history, like people have told me too much about like why we moved or whatever, and how like even just on in terms of that you can have like so much difference. And I think he specifically said like me and R.F. Kuang don't come from the same diaspora, which I find like really interesting, because like obviously like literally they do, but they have like such completely different, and you know, they ended up in the same country, and like they kind of have like sort of similar backgrounds when you think about it, like that they can end up with like such different relationships to history. So I think like even though originally my motivation to like sort of rediscover my identity out of angst was very much steeped in learning about history and learning about like so-called like Sinoculture, you know, as you were saying, just like, oh, like Leslie Cheung and stuff, ultimately I guess like just like the idea of history itself is kind of fake, because even history doesn't really unite the Sino diaspora in that way, because like people have experienced it so differently, and people are learning about it or have like different ways of knowing about history. So anyway, like all that to say, like even though it seems like we're all connected by this like common legacy, like actually we're not, like it's just so diverse. And it kind of goes back to my idea where like I honestly think that ultimately at the end of the day, the only thing that really, and again this is a very half-formed thought, the only thing that really unites like the Sino diaspora is again like the Sino diaspora as the history of capitalism, which provides us with the answer for like thinking about the future, right? Like, why is it important that we build community? It's because ultimately we have something on the horizon that we all want to work towards. And then obviously, like, how does Sign Theta fit into that? Like, we're just a magazine, right? Like, at the end of the day, I on a daily basis, I'm like assigning interviews, I'm like editing like a poem about like an egg or whatever. And like that's not going to like start the revolution or whatever, but I guess it's just like sort of keeping that idea on the horizon. It's kind of two-pronged. On the one hand, like we in gathering community in the first place, like we want to get people to start thinking more about like all these different things that we've been talking about. Like for example, for me, this has come from like 5 solid years of just like thinking nonstop about like being part of the diaspora, and there are so many people who are like still on the very beginnings of that journey. So I think just like having a space in which people can like work things through both on their own and with people that they can talk to is like important. And then ultimately we're all like here to maybe like, I don't know, maybe eventually they'll get enough propaganda from me to become like communist or whatever. And then secondly, I guess I also kind of want to think about like reforming our very like philosophies, like sort of as a society, in terms of like how we might relate to one another. And this kind of like plays into like currently I'm like really into eco-criticism and thinking about how we should like what it means to like dissolve the boundary between the human and the non-human, and how it completely like makes us rethink the way that we interact with the world, makes us rethink, like, ideas of indigeneity and land. In terms of art, like, art ultimately helps us to, like, reconfigure our very, like, ontologies and, like, how we conceive of our existence. Which, like, again, like, the poem of, like, an egg might not be able to do that, but it's genuinely just, like, really fun to be working on that and then to ultimately want the same thing, if that makes sense. But then at the end of the day, like, yeah, Sign Theta is just, like, a publication, and I guess it's, like, more of a starting point for people to get together and talk to each other.
I think it's interesting that you said that history is, like, not a great unifier, I guess, for the Sino diaspora, because when you said that, I thought, like, okay, maybe it's, like, art, maybe it's the mutual, like, project or the decision to make, like, Sino art, or, like, to just make art as a Sino person. But then I was like, well, I think not all people, like, have the same mission when they're creating art, and, like, do you see, like, contentions, like, within this in, like, the, like, pieces that you look for Sign Theta, or, like, for people who submit to Sign Theta?
Yeah, actually, for sure. Like, so a lot of these thoughts kind of come from, like, seeing all the submissions that we get. Like, I remember at some point, we just keep getting, like, diaspora angst poetry, right? People would just send us poems where they're like, I'm so sad because I don't speak Hokkien, and my grandma, like, we can't talk to each other. We can only talk to each other through the language of food. Like, she makes me a dumpling, and that's how she tells me she loves me, and then, like, I'm so torn, like, blah, blah, blah. There's just, like, so much of that, like, work out there, and, like, it's so valid, because, like, everyone kind of really needs to confront that in themselves and, like, to think about it. But then, like, I feel like there's also, and this is kind of an issue with, like, the literary establishment overall, there tends to be, like, a tokenization of, like, that kind of experience as, like, the be-all, end-all of, like, a cross-cultural or a diasporic experience. Whereas I feel like, to me, that's kind of a phase that you should go through and then get over, like, as soon as you can, so that you can start thinking about the good ways in which your hybrid position can, like, can open doors instead of making you feel sad all the time. So, like, that was, like, the one thing where I was like, I'm so sick of getting these poems. Like, why is this a thing, right? Why is everyone, like, so obsessed with writing poems about, like, how they don't speak Chinese? Like, honestly, I don't care. So, yeah, like, definitely, like, a lot of this is, like, looking at the kind of things that people make art about, especially, like, when you see, like, what a lot of different people are making art about, like, it becomes less of a personal thing, and it becomes more of, like, thinking about how people might be relating to their communities, their various communities, whether it's their family, or, you know, even the online writing community and stuff like that. In terms of submissions, like, nowadays, like, if people send us that kind of work, like, unless it's really, really good, in which case we'll, like, call them and be like, hey, we really like this, but can you not make it about, like, how sad you are that, like, you only see your grandma once a year? Maybe think about, like, this tree that you wrote about, like, that's quite interesting. So, like, we have all these themes, and, like, we kind of want people to, I guess, make art in an environment where they don't feel pressured to have to make it be about their identity. Like, we really, we nowadays we publish, like, work that just adheres to our theme and is, like, wacky and cool. And, like, in general, I guess, thinking about how your, like, sort of lived experience or identity isn't something that you have to, like, wear as a badge or, like, show people through your art, but that you can kind of take what's radical about it and infuse it not into just your art, but also just into, like, the way that you interact with others and, like, your lifestyle. And that goes back to, like, this issue, which is, like, at the end of the day, Sign Theta is still just a magazine, and, like, especially with COVID nowadays, like, I really struggle with thinking about, like, practice or praxis and, like, ways that I can actually make, like, a real impact in the world where it's needed. So that's definitely something that I want to think about a bit more. Like, I guess in terms of Sign Theta, it would be, like, doing more events, doing more, like, workshops and community, like, connecting more with people who wouldn't necessarily normally submit to us. But then also personally, like, I just want the day to come where we can go out there and start, like, setting fire to police stations and stuff, you know?
I love that. Yeah, it's so great to feel, like, empowered by your identity and not, like, sad about it, I guess, is the only thought I have in response. I totally agree. Yeah, so then I wanted to ask about, like, the just vastness and size of the Sino-diaspora and how the community encounters and encompasses, like, a wide range of political issues, both local and global in scale. As we said before, like, issues with, like, Taiwan and Hong Kong, like, in terms of, like, identity or, like, politics or, the Sino-diaspora in, like, other countries or, like, in the U.S. So, like, how do you see those politics within the Sino-diaspora emerge in the creative projects that the community produces, for example, that you see over at Sign Theta, and then, like, in general, maybe in, like, work you like? What, like, prevalent tensions do you see, like, arise within the community?
Yeah, so what's actually really interesting is, like, right now we have this newsletter called Cosign, which is, like, this twice-a-month newsletter that we've been doing for, like, our Patreon rewards. And tomorrow there's, like, a new one coming out, and we've had, like, this guest come on. Like, honestly, he's just, like, our friend. Like, he's, like, our number two fan after my mom. So we were like, oh, like, Aaron, you should write an issue of Cosign. And he wrote about the novel How Much of These Hills is Gold by C. Pam Jung, which, like, I really, really enjoyed when I first read it. I thought it was, because I had, I spent last summer in California, and I was, like, super depressed because, like, California is just, like, kind of an evil place to be, no offense, if anyone is from there. Like, I was, because, like, as a European, I was, like, who can't drive? I was just, like, this place sucks. And the whole time I was just, like, really haunted by, like, the violent history of it. Like, I couldn't enjoy myself because I was just thinking about, like, how everything's named after either Spanish colonials or, like, indigenous people who have been, like, erased. I was just like, this is, like, a really depressing place. Anyway, so basically when I read How Much of These Hills is Gold, I was, like, really struck by it personally because it resonated with, like, a lot of thoughts that I was having, and I thought it was really beautiful. It's also, like, kind of queer, which I loved. But then, like, our guest writer was writing specifically about the use of language and how in that novel, everyone, even though they're, like, gold miners in, like, 19th century San Francisco, they speak Mandarin. And he was like, it's kind of messed up that, like, it would be Mandarin. And the only reason that Jung made it Mandarin was because she speaks Mandarin. She was like, oh, I don't want to, like, make it Cantonese and then get something wrong. So basically she didn't even try. Like, she just decided to use Mandarin because it was interchangeable with Cantonese. And, like, that is, not only obviously does it, like, just, like, kind of hurt people's feelings who are Cantonese, who are descended from, like, these immigrants from the 19th century, it also reflects, or kind of, it's parallel to what we see nowadays with, like, the gentrification of Chinatowns, the different waves of immigration, and how, for example, now, like, for example, London Chinatown, which I'm quite familiar with, like, you see a lot of traditional, like, Cantonese-owned establishments disappearing. You see a lot of mainland Chinese or just, like, sort of modern, like, 21st century corporations, multinational corporations come in and, like, start opening these, like, really nice places that are specifically oriented towards, like, a newer mainland Chinese, like, 留学生 population, right? So anyway, like, I guess in that, like, what I mean to say is that, like, the issue of using Mandarin in How Much of These Hills is Gold isn't just a personal issue or an identity issue. It actually ends up being quite analogous to very real economic and societal issues that are happening at the same time today. So that's, like, the kind of stuff that the diaspora has to contend with, because even though I did previously say that, like, I'm less interested in, like, the internal politics of the source land, like, I'm just super scared of, like, certain people who are, like, really into the CCP. But, like, it really does still kind of have, you still have to contend with it because the patterns are replayed. And, like, you, like, yourself showing, like, the reason why we migrate is usually economic, and it's not something that we can get away from. So, yeah, I think it's, like, it's tough because, like, there are, like, so many different perspectives on how people of the diaspora are supposed to connect with the source land, like, whether we have to, like, defend the source land because of racism or geopolitics, and, like, whether we owe anything to the source land, really. Like, do we really owe it to the source land to, like, do we owe attachment or loyalty or anything like that? I think, like, those are really tough questions because they're very personal, and but they're also, like, so entangled with national borders. As long as we keep, like, the priority in view, which is that we're trying to build a borderless world, and we're trying to do that in solidarity with, like, all other marginalized or marginal groups, I guess that's something that we just have to keep in mind.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, so my next question was, what does building community and solidarity look like to you and in relation to Sign Data Magazine? And what do you view, like, the role of the creative arts in building and achieving those goals?
Sure. So I think, like, the creative arts is sort of a means to an end. Maybe, like, I'm not supposed to say that as an art historian, but I think that art is interesting, like, when you know what you're doing with it. So yeah, I think building community, really difficult, but also exciting, exhilarating. Exhilarating because it's difficult, because you know that you're doing something important. And when I was younger, like, everyone is like, oh, you know, I want to be, like, unique, I want to be special. But, like, nowadays, I actually, like, my dream is just to be part of, like, a really nice community and to, like, love my friends and to all be working towards something together. So yeah, I think that's important. How to do it, I don't know. Just, like, Tumblr, Twitter, like, calls and stuff, and, like, for now. And then in the future, like, going outside together and, like, trying to do things together, no matter how small. And then, yeah, art as a means to that end.
And that's all for today. You can find more of Jachi's work at Sign Theta Magazine over at signtheta.net. Thank you so much to Jachi for being on the show and to the rest of the Radio New Bloom team for their help and support in producing this episode. Until next time, thanks for tuning in to Radio New Bloom. Good night, Taiwan.